Here's another quick intro about this podcast. I'm only doing intros for the past ones that weren't uploaded online yet, so everyone can get a little idea if they're dated, if there's anything in there. So I actually sat down with my friend Adam Press, who's a chef up in Sparta, my wife, who is also a chef, and my wife, and we ended up talking about a lot of food, tattoos, and dreams. So give it a listen, and I hope you enjoy. Yeah. Bye.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Commissioner!
Hey, this is Scott Brennan again with another Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Today I'm joined by two special guests. One of them is my friend Adam Press here, lives locally, chef. And one of them is my actual wife, Julie Brennan. So we decided to do a podcast just right off the cuff here.
We're going to do it.
So both of them are trained chefs, I would say.
Yes, we cook, and he doesn't have that much say in what we do because we cook and he does not cook.
That's basically the equivalent of the statements you're going to get tonight from her. So this is another episode. The first thing I wanted to talk about before we kind of get into the whole food realm. Okay, because I know that's kind of where this is going to go. I had a really weird dream the other night.
Oh, God.
You guys want to hear about
it? It's funny. I have the beer.
What did you dream about?
What did you dream about, Scott?
It involved John Lennon.
So I had this dream. I was in this church-like setting. And there was four of us kneeling at the altar, right? But the four of us is a strange combination to begin with. It was me, Julie's mother,
Christine Dwork. Let me shout you out.
Chris Wan, who's been on a bunch of these podcasts, and my friend Joe Strozlik, who I only see now and then.
Mm-mm. His hands are very dirty.
So, there's the four of us sitting there at the altar, and we are in praying form, by the way. And all of a sudden, from like a cable, like a wrestling intro, comes John Lennon. John Lennon is playing Love Me Do. And the four of us are praying like, oh my God, John Lennon has come back and he's playing. We're seeing him play. And it was amazing. And we're all worshiping him. The church is clapping like a Baptist church, like a Black Baptist church. And then it was almost like the encore from another line. Who do you think comes down?
I have no idea.
Paul McCartney comes swinging down.
I would have said P. Diddy.
Yeah, P. Diddy. So Paul McCartney comes down. They start joining on stage for all these songs, and everyone's clapping. And then, you know, after the mass, we had. Apparently, John Lennon and Paul McCartney come to Julie's mom's house for like a repass.
Whoa!
And
repass.
Well, John Lennon's dead. So.
Yeah, they're already dead. I mean,
maybe his own repass. And so we had meals with John Lennon and Paul McCartney.
Meals with John
and then
Lennon.
I woke up. I woke up and I was like. You know when you wake up and you have to, like, focus? Like, did I just actually dream that? Is this real for a minute?
Meals with John Lennon.
Sorry. Meals with John Lennon, folks. Meals with John Lennon. So that's what I want to start off with. Can either of you remember a weird dream you've had before?
I don't tend to hold on to them very long.
No?
I had a weird dream.
I have some weird fucking dreams.
Some people
disappear pretty quickly.
Some people say that they dream and they can never remember them. Some people have told me they never dream. They can't remember ever dream. And other people, like, hold on to me. Like, I have some weird ones, but I have repeating dreams. Like, I'm hoping John Lennon will come back tonight, maybe.
That'd be pretty sweet.
I actually had the worst dream the other night.
Go ahead.
I had a situation where I felt like I was part of It, and you all know It back in
Stephen like the movie
King. Creepy fucking clown.
It is so creepy. And I took a shower, and I ended up having a day off. So I went back to bed, but in my dream...
Wait, in the dream you had the day off?
No. Oh, okay. No, I like...
I just have a question. Sure. What's a day off?
Nothing you will know, because you work in a restaurant. So see you later. So I did the shower thing, right? It's rare, because I'm not like the cleanest person. But I... went back to bed, and I had this dream that It was coming up. Not It, like It, like whatever you guys think. Like, It, the clown, was coming up through my dream. And that frightened me, and I probably shit myself. And that was terrible.
The other dream that...
I feel like that's important, though, before you interrupt. Like, that's a really terrible dream.
Sounds pretty terrifying.
Yeah. Like, blood is coming up through your whatever the fuck, you know, and they're like, oh, I'm gonna die, oh, I'm awake. But, like, you're scared.
Yeah.
And then also you might die, you think. You might think.
I've had, there's two dreams that stick out the most to me. One of them when I was a kid, probably in, like, high school, I had this dream. I went into this, like... Quick Check or Krausers, and all of a sudden everything started getting really weird, and the cashier turned into this weird alien, and he was like, get out if you want your life, and like all the customers started turning into aliens. And I ran out of the Quick Check or the Krausers, and all of a sudden the parking lot was a pool full of Jell-O, and I was stuck in this pool full of Jell-O, and then these UFOs were coming down to take me, and I was stuck in a pool full of Jell-O. And I remember that dream so clear.
Yeah, that dream sucks.
And also, like, people see, like, meanings in dreams. What the fuck? How could have any
it
meaning?
It means that you're just maybe a psycho. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're a psycho.
Axe murderer.
Axe murdering psycho is always a possibility.
And, well, I feel like, Adam, you have one? A dream that you want to, like...
Oh, no, I don't. No.
He don't dream.
I don't dream. No, I do. I just don't remember for very long.
He doesn't dream. He waits.
I don't actually sleep. I just sit in my bed all night.
Can we bring it into food, though?
Hold on. We're getting there. And then the last dream that I can remember has happened a couple times, and I don't know why. I become a soldier, like in Iraq or Afghanistan.
That's something else.
And I'm like hunting, like the number one. Mm-hmm.
You're hunting. That's great.
You know, the... This is going to be a long podcast.
I'm just saying he's hunting. It's great. It's fantastic. He's hunting. Like, what do you want?
But I'm like hunting the number one like suspect, like Bin Laden or someone like that. And I'm going through these like mansions, and I have like a SEAL team with me, and it always ends before I can get him.
That's very disappointing.
You didn't get him yet, and you keep trying.
Apparently, I'm not good enough. Not good enough to get him.
No, but you'll get him one day. You'll get him.
Thanks, babe.
I promise.
Yeah.
I swear.
Thanks, babe.
One day
I'll get Bin Laden in my dreams. That fucker.
One day that fucker is me.
I feel like somebody beat you to that, buddy. I'm sorry to bring it to you.
Well, one day he'll get something.
Apparently no one's off limits. McCartney, Lennon, Bin Laden. It doesn't matter.
One day it's going
to
be yours.
I feel like somebody beat you to the killing Lennon, too.
I never wanted to kill Lennon.
Did
I? Wish he was alive.
Yeah.
We all do.
Well, we always do.
All right. So, the focus of this show, the main one today, is...
excuse us.
We're going to talk about food a little bit, because we have two people who are, you know, basically their lives revolve around the cooking of food,
Like, what do you want from us?
You can speak for yourself.
The love of food.
you're not that thin. Like, it's rude.
Anyway, I just didn't know how to go on with this podcast. But so I'm going to start with Adam here.
Yeah, buddy.
you were, when did you, let's start at the beginning. Let's start at the beginning. Your journey through food. How did you start getting into it and decide that that's what you actually wanted to
do? Before I became fat. Since that's what God's implying.
That's not at all what I'm implying. Julie's drunk.
She looks really good, though. So any ladies out there that are single...
Adam, the question was, how did you start?
Wait, where do we start this again?
Yeah, exactly. Try to ignore Julie because I'm going to turn off her microphone in a second. The question was, how did you start getting like into food, knowing that you wanted to do that early on?
Well, honestly, when I was in high school, I kind of wanted to be an architect. Mm-hmm. I was taking classes and stuff, and then it was kind of a weird, random thing, but. One day I realized I didn't want to sit behind a desk for the next 50 years of my life.
Yeah.
That was not in my future. I kind of started looking back and realized that I spent a lot of time in the kitchen with my family. Growing up in a Jewish family, you know, all the holidays and everything were always revolved around food. And my grandparents did all the cooking from scratch, all the baking. Everything was always in the kitchen. And they didn't mess around, you know? They made some good stuff. Yeah. I happened to always find myself in the kitchen, and I was probably one of the only guys in my family, besides my grandfather, who was hanging out in the kitchen. And it was just something that interested me, so I wound up looking at some schools and took a job at some random pub in the area. And I don't know. As horrible as the hours are and... the stress and the amount of work you got to put into it, it was something that just kind of clicked. And when it's in your blood, you just got to do it.
Yeah. Now, Adam, why don't you explain what you do now a little bit?
Right now, I'm the executive chef of an Italian restaurant in Sparta called Forno Italiano. Just kind of got a call one day and asked if I was interested in going to this place. I've been working at a whole lot of restaurants over the years, all different sorts, and never really intended to be an Italian type chef, but it's just kind of...
I guess that goes with the territory. You kind of go where you got to go. Pretty you know much what I mean? Like any job, though.
You live in North Jersey long enough, you're bound to work in an Italian restaurant, I guess. Yeah.
Not only that, you never get a career where you're like, I'm exactly where I want to be day one, you know? It takes...
Yeah, no.
It takes some redirecting and working through the grind.
There's definitely a grind involved.
So, I know you have some funny stories about being a chef and stuff like that, but we're going to go to Julie now. Julie, tell us where you started your love for food, how it, like, maybe you had some doubts about something, or did you always want to do food, or, go ahead.
You know, it's funny, I started with my uncle, who was a huge influence in my life, and... he passed away, unfortunately, but I remember him making salsa and me being like, how the fuck do you make salsa? That's not a thing. Like, don't you just buy it? Like, what the fuck? So ever since then, I always wanted to be him. He was like my life. He was what I wanted to be. He always smelled like seafood. Like, that's weird. Like,
You achieved it. You smell like seafood.
Right. No, I'm fine. Like, why do you smell
But not
like
because
a
you work
bad?
With seafood.
Like, why do you smell bad a little bit? But I accepted it. And since then, that's been my life. All I know is food. That's all I'm good at. Like,
That's not true.
Oh, thank you. It's very nice. But no, that really is all I'm good at. Like, that's what I do well at.
But tell, like, a little bit, like, how did it... How did you get, like, to where you went to culinary school?
Well, I became a lunch lady. That's great. I mean, good job, Jewel. You're a lunch lady.
You're a boss, lunch lady.
Lunch lady boss.
I moved when I was 18 to Philadelphia because I couldn't take life anymore. And I was like, I'm going to move to Philadelphia. And I
went to school?
The restaurant school at Walnut Hill College. You know? And... I ended up graduating valedictorian.
Yes, she did. I was there. I recorded her speech, which is... we'll tell about that little funny
clip. All right, we'll eat grandma for a minute or whatever.
But, like, did you cook a lot at home, like, before you went to school?
I feel like I did. Like, I cooked way less than I should have. Right. But, yeah, I did cook. I mean, not anything compared to today, you know?
Right. Yeah, so both of these two have, they have...
We also did a dinner together.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely a thing.
That's a thing.
I got a job for a catering job. And
we were up all night.
It was like a 48-hour venture to cook a dinner for like 50 people. Mm-hmm.
I remember that.
Yeah, that was a hell of a time. And then Julie, you know, was like, oh, by the way, I can't really work the day of the party.
Wait, mind you, I had a previous commitment. It wasn't my fault.
Yeah.
All right, well, yeah. Well,
okay, whatever. So that's a little bit of background. I mean, Julie, you kind of skipped your college experience, though.
What do you mean?
You went to the restaurant school in a restaurant school of Walnut Hill College.
Right.
When you got there, like, what was, what made you know that you were in the right place? Like, what
nothing. I had a black roommate who was pregnant and was really scary. And then my other roommate wasn't there. And I was like, I'm by myself even more so. And then I met a hot guy. It's not you.
No.
And that made me, like, transition a little bit. But then after that, I realized that I, like, was in love with Scott. And he's going to support me through, like, whatever. And I only know how to cook. Like, I am not smart, but I know how to cook. Like, that's how I felt. Like, I felt like I never knew anything.
Now, like, tell me what, like, tell me what, like, a typical class would be. Like, tell me, like, you go to class. Like, because I'm coming from a background of going to Ramapo. I went to public, you know, like,
you walk in, you have to line up. Mm-hmm. And you have to, like, be clean. And that was the whole thing. You know, you have to, like, be clean. You have to wear your necktie and your little cuff. You have to wear
chef outfit.
And they have to be clean. So you're standing, and chef shoes, and you're standing there, and 6 o'clock in the morning, and you're like, all I want to do is just kill myself. Like, I would have rather ran to a bus.
Tell me more, like, I'm trying to get into it.
Like, so you wait, and then
everyone... You can't fight on a podcast. Tell me.
And then
tell me why.
Fight. Like, it's just...
Tell me how the class went.
The class went like shit. We were tired. It's 6 o'clock.
No, that's bullshit. Because I remember when I was dating you, you would go to class and make some great meal and eat it, and that would be your class.
All right. Yeah. But you would have to, like, go in. Then you have to wait, like, make sure that your appearance was fine. Then you'd have to... Oh, they look at your shoes. I was real serious.
But was there, like, a job of the day? Make something of this?
No. It was your class. So, like, if you were doing, like, meats, you did meats. Like, if you're doing organ meats, we did organ meats. And that's what we did for the day. We had, like, 5-hour class on organ meats. And then you eat it. And then maybe you feel sick or you don't.
Now, her school was very interesting because you walked into this school and it felt like a play set.
Well,
right?
Well, it was designed by Broadway.
It looked like it looked like an Italian market, kind of, right? Would you say it like that, or like a market, like a marketplace almost?
Right, right.
And you went in. Now, I remember the first time she took me to her school. I was like, "What is this place?" But apparently, all this stuff goes on behind the scenes, and you actually. Like, the food a lot of time went to, what, students? Like, if they wanted to eat it?
Well, there were 4 restaurants in the place. And then all the students were accessible to having just school dinner. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, it was pretty interesting. It was a very, you know, like, my school was...
Are you getting more? Are we on the radio?
Yeah, we're on the radio. My school was... more like, you know, traditional, go to class, come back, stuff like that. But her school was very unique. I've never seen anything like it. Basically, I guess they almost had, like, free slave labor. I mean, you paid,
no, no, we
you
didn't.
Paid tuition,
we,
cooked for the restaurant, they made money off the food.
We didn't have slaves.
You're saying you were the slaves.
You were the slave.
I was a slave. No.
All right. Well, I'm going to swing it over to Adam Press. Adam Press, he had a whole different story. I want you to talk a little bit about your college classes, how you really start to learn the craft.
He's into food,
yeah, that's
too.
That's perfect.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I went to Johnson Wales in Providence. They have a few different campuses.
Rhode Island.
In Rhode Island, yeah. Providence, Rhode Island. I don't know if I've been any others. But, you know. So, I mean, the classes were definitely different from other, you know, traditional colleges, I guess. We had trimesters, and it was 5 classes per trimester.
Five classes per trimester?
Yeah, so instead of per
like
semester.
15 a year then?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It was definitely a little more intensive than some other college programs. It was meant for a 2-year degree, an associate's degree.
Oh, okay.
And, it, you know, I mean, instead of having 5 classes per semester, we had 3 semesters per year, basically. And when you were in the culinary classes, each class, instead of having 1 class a day for – you know, however many weeks, you had 1 class.
That's the microphone falling. We're not going to stop Dave because we're just going to roll with it, baby.
Very classy, you know, stand here. Oh. Anyway.
By the way, my mic stands right now are candle lanterns that I have because my mic stands are at my old drummer's house. So we're just clipping mics to
just kind of rolling
lantern.
With it.
We're just rolling with it. That's how we do it.
It's a lantern.
Hey, go ahead, Adam.
Anyway, point of the story was you had a class basically for 9 days, and it was a 7-hour class or whatever, from 7 o'clock in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon, or 1:30 till 7:30 at night. I guess it's 6 hours, but whatever. So you'd have classical French or stocks and sauces to start you off. We work on your knife skills and stuff like that.
For a second, I thought you said stocks and sausage. I'm like, that's the greatest class ever invented.
Maybe.
Yeah, no, there is.
I would take that now. Stocks and sausage.
Lots of sausage.
Stocks
yeah,
and sausage.
Yeah.
I was like, that's the best class ever made. Go ahead.
But anyway, so yeah, it was the same kind of thing. You know, I mean, uniform was a big fucking big deal. You'd show up, and if your uniform, your clothes were dirty, or you weren't in the right situation, or even if you weren't shaved as a dude, if you had a little stubble, you'd be considered out of uniform.
So
they
how
could
did you
send
do
you
it?
Home for the day. Now I rock a beard pretty hard, but back then I was definitely clean shaven, didn't have much of an option.
Yeah.
So, you know, you deal with it. Yeah, no, Julie, you know, didn't have a problem with the shaving thing.
I did not.
But, there was actually, you know, funny story. There was actually a girl who showed up to class one day, and this chef was so hardcore that when he was checking out uniforms and stuff, he made this girl go home and shave her mustache.
No way.
I swear
no
to God.
Way.
It was kind of one of the most
oh
effed
God.
Up things you could
first
ever
off,
make someone do.
First off, in my head, if I was doing that, I'd be like, lawsuit. You know, like straight off the bat, lawsuit.
I feel like that's a possibility. But as a chef, there's a lot of things you just deal with.
But also, like,
stress and
right.
harassment and otherwise in the business that just
kind of
comes to the territory.
The
girl had a little stubble.
No,
I mean, it happens.
You know what?
But the chef actually made her go home and shave. And, I mean, she went home crying. That's for damn sure. But she
so,
went home.
I mean, that's
the
probably the worst thing to go home as a female, saying I had to go home to shave my beard.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I guess most of the rest of us were pretty terrible people, and we got kind of a laugh out of it. But she did not find it hilarious at all.
So what was, like, an average class like? That's the kind of question going on here.
Most of the classes, you know, you'd go in, you'd sit down, take notes like any other class for an hour or two, and talk about cuisine, whatever region you were studying that week or whatever the case was. And then you'd get an assignment for the day, whether you're doing the entree or appetizer or salad, and you'd go off and you'd get some recipes. And you'd get graded on how well you follow the recipe,
to,
pretty much.
We would go down to purchasing, and, like, if we needed stuff, we would go down to, like, our purchasing department and
Yeah, we had there was a whole class called Storeroom Procedures, basically, where the students would take the opportunity to learn all about different kinds of ingredients and where they were located. And they I think feel like they had a pretty good setup there going, where one class would collect all the ingredients and send it to another class, and the other class would cook all those ingredients for the day. And there were a few other classes that would be in the same building, and the food you cooked would basically serve as the lunchroom for several other students in the same building.
That's pretty interesting.
Turn the mic towards you.
Hello.
Whoa. not that close.
Don't get all up in it.
Up again.
I just might turn it.
It reminds me of a class that I had where I was the only person in the class, and I got a B, and I will always...
Wait. You were the only person in the class? Explain that a little bit.
No.
You need to go into detail about that.
There's no detail.
How do you get a B, and you're the only one?
I was the only person, and I got a B. I will forever. I mean, granted, I graduated, like, you know, top of class, but
apparently,
at the time, I got a B.
I didn't know you were the only person in that class. That's crazy.
Yeah, and I would have to, like, cook shit, and I would be like, Bellini, how the fuck do I have a B when I'm cooking, like, all the shit?
What a dickhead.
Yeah, everyone's mad at it. I mean, I'm mad at him.
Everyone's still mad at it.
Everyone in that class, which means Julie.
Well, it's only me.
Whole class was
mad. I remember...
The class was rioting.
About their grades.
I remember, like, it being my birthday, and I'm like, I'm the only one. I'm like, I'm the only one here. Like, how can you be mad at me? Why are you giving me a B?
So... bringing this to the next discussion, you guys have both, very different careers. Adam is an executive chef at a restaurant. Julie has an amazing schedule job. I guess she doesn't feel challenged a lot, right?
True.
But she does have, she works for, she's basically in charge of a school district, for ordering all the food. So, I heard both of you talking before, and I actually told you both to shut up before because these are great podcast stories. Do either one of you have a kind of like a funny story about being a chef or something that defines being a chef as a story? Like, Adam, I heard you talking before about the duck and stuff like that, how people order it. Just kind of I want to get into the mind of a chef. You know what I mean?
Well...
Go ahead.
We're having mic issues.
All right.
This will all be deleted.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't know. I guess as a chef, you know, over the years, you learn a lot of stuff about food. And there are certain things, you know, certain items where it should be, I guess, prepared a certain way. Or optimally speaking, anyway. And I guess the general public is not always...
Accepting
or... willing to just eat whatever you put in front of them, I guess. Yeah. I mean, that's I don't know, in your experience, like, I mean, it, as a chef, like, I...
Just eat what the fuck I make. Like, it's gonna be good. I promise you, it's gonna be good.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, especially when you're talking about things, I mean, I guess we were particularly talking about duck and pork, and I guess certain people are kind of weird about having things cooked, you know, well done or cooked through, whatever the case may be. But, I mean, the bottom line is that as a chef, I'm not going to try and poison you as my customer. I feel
I'm
like
not
that's
killing you.
Kind of a ridiculous thing
right.
to assume that I might yeah. even attempt to make you sick. That would kind of have a general, horribly bad impact on my business. So I would not steer you in the wrong direction. When a customer comes in and says, listen, I've never had duck before, I'll go with the chef's recommendation on temperature, and I'll send it to you probably mid-rare, something like that. That's cool. But if somebody comes in and asks for either a tuna steak or duck breast well done, and as a chef I know that's probably not the highest quality product I could send you, I get a little apprehensive.
I'm sure the servers
in my restaurant will probably have relay some choice words to you that I might give to them for said incidents. But Yeah, bottom line is you should trust your chef when you're, especially when you're willing to spend a couple of bucks on a good meal.
Decent meal.
They're probably not going to steer you wrong. It is not in their best interest.
No.
Julie, the funny stories that you have, maybe like, you have a whole different perspective because you probably, you went with a job that really, schedule-wise,
I'm a lunch lady.
You're not a lunch lady. You're in charge of the lunch lady.
How is my volume, though?
You're perfect.
I'm basically a lunch lady, though. I mean, I have to admit, I have 40 employees.
40?
40.
So, and not only that, you're in charge of several districts because you know how to do your job.
I just got 7 more districts.
Oh,
so.
Good.
Yeah.
I guess I'll see you. I guess I'll see you never.
I'll see you never. Yeah, it's been real. Glad that we have a relationship.
All due respect, Scott, you did marry Chef, so you should be used to that.
Yep. Oh, thanks, Adam. I agree.
So tell me like a funny quirk about the job. Tell me something interesting.
I have all the quirks. I mean,
go ahead. All the quirks coming up. Bang. Their mic just crashed again.
Sorry, we laugh too hard.
Experiencing some technical difficulties.
So, Joel, tell me something that you think would be like funny for people to hear that who are not in your job.
Okay, well, hold on, world.
Go ahead.
Just
talk.
Not everyone needs to eat Fritos. I've learned that.
Now, Julie, also, you have something different than that. Adam makes a good meal. That's his job. Your job is to...
Are you going to make fun of me about my Frito pie?
In a minute. But you also have a job where you got to, like, do these weird, like, standards, right? Like, there has to be a certain amount of this and that.
Yeah, there
has to be. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, every kid that needs to come through the line has to have a green, a protein, a vegetable. So I make sure that my cashiers are aware of that.
That's a far step from like when we were in high school, like where kids would literally have a cookie, the big cookie for lunch, and French fries.
And French fries. Or like the pretzel.
And probably a bottle of soda.
Yep.
Yeah, and the pretzel. And a Coke. You could.
Ours was Snapple.
I mean, I graduated.
Pure sugar.
I graduated 9 years ago, and now I'm old.
You're so old.
Now you're old.
And, but
for the record, I think you're the youngest one in the room. But I mean, beside that,
I am. You guys are old shits. But
old bearded dudes.
Tell us
what you got to go through, like your average day, what kind of things you have to abide by.
Just give the audience
a little bit of like something into your job, a little bit.
It's a little bit different than you think, though. Like, my average day is I get up, bring whoever has to go to wherever they have to go, and then I go to work, and you know what? It depends. Sometimes I have to, like, cook at an elementary school. Sometimes I have to cook at the high school. Sometimes I have to, like, go to the bank. Sometimes I have to... Sometimes I'm like a teacher. I've had to teach things. Yeah. So
I feel like sometimes maybe your job. Sometimes you're. I guess your biggest complaint is you're not on the. You're not on the grill as much. You're not cooking as much, right?
Well, all I know how to do is cook.
I guess through your job, you have learned how to like. You've done budgets for full districts and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, that's fine.
And, like, you've learned that pretty easily. And now you're, like, teaching people how to do it.
Yeah. I just want to cook, though.
Yeah.
That's all I'm good at, right?
Did you have, like, a funny story about
your
district? Nothing?
No, I don't want... No.
What?
No. I have no funnies.
All right. No funnies. So...
I probably could think of one, but...
All right. Well, think of one. But the next topic on this is going here. Adam, it's back to you. Do you love your job, and do you love what you do, and why?
Well, also, you guys aren't giving me a drink, so that's not helping my funnies.
Do you love your job? Why? Why not?
Do I love my job? Does any chef love their job? I mean, generally speaking, it's kind of a really rough business to be in.
Is it like a love-hate kind of thing?
I feel like... Oh, it's definitely a love-hate. You get the creative ability. You get the opportunity to make people happy. I mean, that's really what it boils down to me. If I can make somebody's night out, like, awesome, and they are nothing but smiles and enjoy their evening, that's awesome. But it's still a job where a 60-hour week is a good short week. Yeah. You know, when I get a snow day and it's only an 8-hour day, that's awesome. So it's there's no shortage of hours. There's no shortage of work. As a salary worker with no overtime, you are pretty much always on the grill, on the line, doing something. But at the same time, you get to express your creative side. You do get to put some food together that maybe people had not thought of. You get to come up with some kind of combination that might blow someone's mind, and you get to put create a dish, and if that's what makes someone happy and makes them smile, it's worth and, it. It. Yeah, you know what I mean? I could have the rough day working an 11, 12-hour day, and if I go and talk to a table and they say, you know, they're nothing but smiles, and they say, listen, we had a great time, and whatever the case is, if they're happy, I'm happy. That's really the bottom line. I think if any chef... if you get to create something and you put a smile on somebody else's face, that's kind of what you're in it for.
Absolutely.
Well, you do.
All right. Well, you do. Julie, this goes to you. Do you love your job? If you don't, if you do, tell me why. What are the good parts? What are the bad parts?
Do I love my job? I absolutely. Let me hold that like Mariah Carey, all
right? Right. Go ahead.
I still don't have a lantern. I absolutely love my job for, like, everything that's worth and the hours. But do I love my job? No. Like, I'm meant to do something more. I'm way too creative, and I think I can cook way too well to be a lunch lady. I'm meant to be in the Bronx or Queens or, like, something like that. That's what I need to do eventually.
But so far...
Yeah, anywhere so far, but Brooklyn. And Brooklyn and Manhattan. Exactly.
So far, it's worked out pretty well, though?
It's worked out fine. It's starting to cause a problem, though. I mean, I need to... I can't continue to do this.
So you feel like you're being, like, suppressed. Like, you're not doing what you need to do.
Yeah, I mean, my job is great for me hour and money-wise, but... It's giving me nothing.
Yeah,
there's no creative outlet.
There's no creative outlet, exactly. And I have
like,
that.
You're you more of like an administrator, right? Like, you're kind of like in charge.
I'm the boss. I'm the boss of 40 people. Like, that's my job.
Yeah.
And, but you guys, you've seen what I create just for dinner, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I want to make that for
people. All right, so that's what we're going to call the chef talk segment of the show.
Well, needs to go out a bang.
The third topic I have here, which we can all kind of relate to, is we also did on the other podcast, is tattoos.
You're bringing us into this?
Yeah.
We're the two most tattooed people you know.
That's kind of what I'm talking about. So, tattoos... we talked about it for on the last podcast with Alex, but I guess we're gonna talk a little bit about tattoos. Your first time getting a tattoo, the tattoos you have now, and the tattoos you want to do. So I guess Adam, you should take the helm on this as far as like being the tattoo priest here. Adam has a full back piece, but tell us a little bit about like the first time you got a tattoo, how it kind of went on from there. Go ahead.
Well, I will say it kind of tying the whole subject together. I mean, pretty much being a chef, tattoos are almost a job requirement. If you know any chefs these days, it kind of goes in the territory.
Why do you think that though?
I think. Probably, I mean, there's many like reasons. It's your artistic kind of group of people.
Yeah.
It's part of an expression of your being, your love for the craft. Right. A lot of chefs have culinary-related tattoos. I know people who have tattoos of pigs and diagrams
and
of meat cutting
things. And
it
makes you think, like, when you have a tattoo, like, in your cooking, like, that's something that sets yourself apart or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, it's just another artistic outlet, I guess. But it's kind of goes along with the territory. And, you know, I mean, on top of all that, it's a cash business where you tend to have a lot of time available when other people are off, are working, and you got hours that are way different from everyone else.
That's a good point.
And you know, you got money to blow, and and what are you going
to
spend it on? You know,
you have to blow, and then when you're like a good person, you're not spending it on blow, which is good. But
well, that's a whole other subject. I'm sure we can have a whole other podcast.
All right, we'll do another one on that.
On chefs and their
but
extracurricular
Adam,
activities.
Adam, your first tattoo. Tell us about your first tattoo experience.
Well, I knew for years, probably a long time, that I wanted some tattoos. My first tattoo was probably, definitely, it was in college. I turned 18. I was talking to a girl. And she convinced me, let's go get a fucking tattoo. So I was like, all right, we took a ride up. I was going to school in Rhode Island. We went to, Vermont and picked some random tattoo shop.
Mm-hmm.
I had a couple ideas for tattoos I wanted. Apparently, they were a little too extravagant for my budget at the time. So I wound up, as many are prone to, just kind of picking something off the wall.
Oh, you did do the pick off the wall.
Yeah, you know, I mean, since then, I've definitely had some more artistic endeavors.
You live and learn.
Judging by your back. Yeah.
But, you know, I had some ideas since then that I've...
So what was your first one? What'd you get?
The first one I got was a... It's kind of funny. It was a skull with a jester cap.
Where is it?
It's on my left bicep. It's kind of weird, kind of lame, whatever. It's not that exciting.
Yeah, but...
I don't know, cliche, I guess, but it doesn't have a whole lot of meaning, I guess, behind it. It was kind of like a tattoo that I got to have a tattoo. And I had $75 in my pocket, and the guy's like, this is what I could do for you. So I went with it. Perfect. And then from there, you know, I've gone on to get more than a few other tattoos and plenty in the works for the future. But
now, you have – you actually – I'll give a little – preface here. One day we knew Adam had tattoos, like a couple of tattoos on his arms and maybe your biceps, right?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much the only one I have visible with the t-shirt on is a little lotus flower on my wrist.
But one day we're sitting here just shooting the shit, having a beer or two, and he mentioned he had a tattoo on his back. And I'm thinking, like, a tattoo on his back. Like, maybe he has a flower or a dragon?
I got one flower, no dragons. They're not all that.
But then he bends over and he's like, all right, I'll show you. He takes off his shirt and his whole back. I'm not even talking people like a little bit of his back is done. From, you would say literally, legitimately from the bottom of your neck to your ass, basically, right?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much.
And he got a whole back piece done, which is pretty amazing. It's really good artwork. So, can you tell me a little bit about that piece? That what your desire was for that? What your inspiration was?
I mean, I guess the basic design is nature and the four elements. However you want to look at it.
Five.
Five elements, theoretically speaking.
Yeah.
Earth, air, fire, water, and
wind,
spirit. So, you know, I kind of tied it all together with nature and animals and stuff that I've always had a love for or connection to, I guess. So, you know, fire was a lion with a mane that turned into a flame. Earth was a wolf standing on side of a mountain. Air was a raven and a feather floating in the wind. And water was a giant waterfall scene with the nature and everything like that. At the top is spirit, which is the Eye of Ra, or a pyramid, an ancient, you know, Egyptian symbol.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it's a giant nature scene with the blending. You know, you got a lot of contrast with day and night, and summer and winter, and you know, kind of all the different contrasts.
Now, how many hours do you think that took you total, if you could estimate?
If I had to guess, it was definitely at least 25 sessions of 2.5 hours plus, a minimum of 75 hours for the whole piece. I'd probably say closer to 100 total with all the touch-ups and little bits and pieces and things along the line.
Now, here's the question. As like a normal, do you still love it?
Yeah. No, I still, you know, every now and then it's on my back. It's kind of hard to see. I don't see it all that often. Catching in the mirror. And it's yeah.
When you when you're walking out of the shower, you're like, "Holy shit, I look good."
How I feel about my tattoo, though.
Every now and then, you know, you catch it, and you're like, "Yeah, no, that's badass."
You're like, "Oh damn, my back! I forgot about that shit."
I don't want to brag, but definitely, I'm pretty happy with the vast majority of it.
Good.
It's a great artwork. I definitely had a lot of trust with the artist who did the vast majority of it. We had a great relationship, and he did some awesome work.
And it is awesome work. Maybe for this podcast, I'll put up some embedded pictures. If I can get a picture of your back piece, I could put it up on the site. Julie, this comes to you. You have a couple tattoos. You have some spread out tattoos. Tell us about your first tattoo experience and then when you went further from that.
Well, my first tattoo was I got done with Ashley.
Her friend.
Can we talk about this microphone?
Don't bring it.
You're actually picking up fine, so if you can just get it into a spot.
All right.
So you had your first tattoo with that?
Yeah. We got it done at the same place that my brother had all his done. And we got a star on my foot and her foot, I guess.
But does that mean anything? Like, be honest.
Yeah, it meant a lot.
What did it mean?
Mine fell. We had 5 different layers of our friendship, so that's why we said that we had a star.
Aww, that's so cute.
Okay, fuck you. But...
And then, where'd you go from there? So you got your first one done, and your first one actually has faded a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not happy with it.
Yeah. But that probably took, like, what, 15 minutes each?
7 seconds. I have the one on my wrist that's the heart for my grandma.
That one I love. Tell a little bit about that.
Well, my grandma...
Give a little background on each one.
Well, she writes... every time she writes anything towards us, she puts a heart. So my sister and I...
Well, you did it first.
No, Lizzie and I went together. Yeah.
Go ahead.
And we just traced the heart for my grandma and got it on her wrist.
She does a little heart, like, each time.
Every
time. Grandmother.
So cute. I have one on the back of my leg. That just means peace and faith, and that's what I hope I can achieve in my life.
The squiggly elephant. Right? It's like a namaste kind of thing.
Right. Squiggly elephant.
Squiggly Ellie.
Really,
that's why
guy.
I would refer to it.
Really.
I have the one on the inside of my arm. That means a lot towards, like, actually... my sister-in-law, because she was supposed to have a baby, and she did, but she lost one, and remind me, it used to be 3, not just 2, and so it really affected me, so I, like, got something in that, and so that's I have that tattoo. And I have my sick-ass tattoo on my right arm.
Tell how it started. I mean, we kind of have a similar...
Well,
obviously, we started together.
Well, we used to, like each other. We were like, okay. Like, we used to, like, be okay. Now we're just, I guess, we're friends. We got the same tattoo.
Which was?
A tree.
Pine tree, because... I said on our anniversary that I want to go get a pine tree tattoo because I'm, like, obsessed with, like,
that
around that.
Also.
And we both got pine trees, and they were okay. And then what?
Well, then I took mine to the extreme.
And?
Well,
explain
more.
A little bit.
What else is there?
Yeah. I don't know. It's amazing. You guys want a picture?
Explain a little bit. What the tattoo is.
Oh, well, pine tree is just like, we
Come on, Joel.
The pine tree is just that we are, we like the woods and we're good together. Yes, right?
All right. You turn the microphone off.
I'm not talking about this anymore.
You want to talk about your tattoo?
I don't talk about it.
Is it a good one?
Worst thing I've ever heard.
You do it.
But anyway, so her final tattoo, she got well, you have one more to explain, which that's a cool one. No, the one on here. But we both got a pine tree, but we were both like, you know, it looks cool, but we wanted to do something more with it. So she got like watercolor kind of colors coming off of it, and it looks pretty cool. A lot bigger than I expected, but pretty cool. I went into my tattoo appointment, which I booked for 6 hours for. And I get there. We booked like 1 to 6 or something like that. And it was like 4:30. And Julie's still getting tattooed. And she's like, oh, I'm just getting a little bit of color. And I look at her arm. And pretty much she's got almost a whole piece done. From like shoulder to tricep, pretty much. And then the last tattoo you got, you kind of designed yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Talk about it.
Oh, well, am I on?
You're on.
All right, well, what I did was I got 3 straight lines that are red, meaning blood's thicker than water. So I got from my sister and my brother and I. And we're Native American. So I got up top, I got like a broken arrow, which means that there's broken piece. And then... that doesn't make me laugh.
Come on, Joel. Tell.
All right. And then I got a running water symbol, meaning, like, searching for peace. And then something else that means, like, we're always wanting love.
Yes.
And that's what I want.
Yep. So that brings
I'm not going to get it, but that's what I want.
Yeah, maybe one day.
Well, not with you.
So that brings me to me. I am pretty much a tattoo virgin, especially among these two.
Us?
I decided to get for a long time, I had an idea of doing a lake scene. I was originally going to do it in a shamrock, but I decided not to. I started with a pine tree, and I got basically did a lake scene with a dock and a moose, which I'm like, for some reason, I just love moose. I don't know. It's kind of weird. But,
yeah, you got an obsession with
that.
I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know. There's cool animals, especially when I get to see them in Maine. And a whole lake scene done with color and stuff like that with a dock. Because we spend a lot of time up in like Brent Lake and Lake George and stuff like that. So, this comes to the conclusion of the show, which I haven't even told these two about. There's a little tradition I have to do with the conclusion of the show. Basically, what I want, well, I'm going to start with Adam. This little book I have here is called Great Sex Games by Ann Hooper. I got this as a joke gift at a Christmas present 1 year. And I've been ending the podcast with...
I'm a little scared.
Yep. I've been ending the podcast where people pick a page number and then I read it. And before that, you have to guess what it might be. So, Adam, pick a page number.
Before I do that, I just have a random question. I'm just curious. Why is there a can of pumpkin on the floor?
That's actually a really good question.
Is there a reason for the can of pumpkin?
There is, actually.
That I've almost stepped on 3 times?
The one volume knob on the mixer here is not working correctly, so I have to put some weight on it. So I tried the pumpkin first, but the candle works better.
Oh, okay. Yeah, candle. Yeah.
Adam, a page number, please.
I don't know. What is the maximum here?
Well,
what is the range? I
need the range.
A number. I don't know.
Page 1 to 220.
Right. 74.
Page 74, he says. All right. Let's turn to page 74.
There's only 174, by the way.
Yes, I know. All right. Page 74. Oh, this is a big one. It is a big one. It's called Playing with Vibrators.
Why would
Now, obviously. I guess, like, a lot of times they're kind of like, they give you clues, like, what it might be. But I guess playing with vibrators is pretty much straight up. So let me read you a little excerpt from Ann Hooper's Sex Games. In the first of these games, the man is game's master. In the second game, the woman is game's mistress. As with all imaginative sex games, the first rule is you must take absolutely You must take absolutely certain your actions will be welcome.
Will be work.
The first title is called Happy on Birthday. Today, says the games master, is your unbirthday. He produces a beautifully wrapped package. It's your choice whether or not you unwrap it. But
wait,
if
I have
you
to
do,
wrap my package?
The act of unwrapping means that you agree to fall with anything he then commands. Since only a serious masochist would not unwrap the parcel, you naturally do so. Inside a tiny pencil slim lady's vibrator, take off your panties, orders the game master. He sits on the sofa and orders you to lie across his knee. He then begins to tickle and stroke your genitals. Julie, pick a page.
Four.
Page four. Oh, boy. Well...
You're not going to read the table of contents, are you?
Well, actually, she picked Game Sex Games, Great Sex Games, Introduction.
I don't want that.
The sexiest relationships I've enjoyed were those where trust and excitement were so profound that my partner and I felt we could absolutely do anything in bed. Anything, in quotes. Included spontaneous lovemaking, routine lovemaking, nothing wrong with that, and playing at sex games. I didn't arrive at games playing until I gained confidence, but I'm very glad I got there. I've had fun. I wouldn't have missed it for anything. Yet, to begin with, it wasn't easy to play. So, that's another excerpt from Great Sex Games by Alice Hooper. This has been a Verbal Shenanigans podcast with Scott Brennan.
Verbal Shenanigans.
Scott Brennan.
Julie.
Julie. Brennan. And...
Adam Press.
Keep the wind at your back. Love ya.